Hey, my name is Zenu, and you're listening to Anti-Moonboy News. We got a good show for you guys today. We're going to be talking about my podcast I did with Vlad. 4 hours of content. It was a great conversation, so we're going to go over that. We'll also talk about Tucker Carlson talking about Bitcoin and whether or not the CIA created Bitcoin. And we got some other interesting tidbits too. I do want to touch on Nick Fuentes name dropping Monero again. I thought that was pretty interesting. And also the big announcement of me speaking at Monerotopia. So we got a lot to get to. Now, generally, I open the show reading XMR chats, super chats. However, the site seems to be down right now. I'm going to move that to the end of the show. Hopefully, by the time I am wrapping up the podcast, we can do that. Oh, this is kind of weird not starting with super chats, huh? I feel empty. You know, but no, we'll get to that later. So instead, we'll get right to the main event that happened yesterday, which was me on Vlad's program. And we had been hyping this up on Twitter. We were joking around. We weren't actually at each other's throats. We were hyping it up, though. And I will say, though, going into this, I was a little... I was unsure of how the conversation would go overall, because I know Vlad is very passionate about Zcash. But it was actually a very, very good conversation. And we talked a lot more about... Well, we talked about a lot of other different things. You know, we talked about Bitcoin a lot, actually. I think the first like hour or two was just on Bitcoin stuff. And we do talk on Zcash, and I hit him pretty hard. I was like, listen, there's absolutely no reason why they don't have a road plan or a roadmap to get full-on Z2Z transactions, mandatory Z2Z transactions. Why are there transparent addresses still? Why is there transparency still? It's unacceptable. And it's hard to take the project seriously until they have a plan to actually do that. And so I hit him on that. I destroyed him on the whole argument of adoption and bringing up like, listen, like no one's using Zcash right now. I had the numbers to show it too. It's like, where can you use Zcash? And that's the thing. Like compared to Monero, like Monero has so many different websites where you can use it. You go to Monerica right now and see a whole listing, right? You can go to XMR Bazaar, right? Go to XMR Chat. We really take pride in using Monero. It's just, this is why it's used so much, is because we use it a lot. And I mentioned too, like, there are people in the Monero community who are pissed off about the use Monero tagline. You know, they think that the people saying use Monero don't want the price to go up. And it's like, well, listen, the price going up will go up regardless, or maybe it won't. It's hard to control these things. It's better to just focus on building that crypto anarchist type of mindset where we want digital cash, so we have to use it. We can't just play this tech stock, you know, Ponzi that is effectively what cryptocurrency has turned into. By using a cryptocurrency, we are actively participating in the advancement of that cryptocurrency. And I pointed out, listen, these Zcash people, they're not using it. And I mean, lately they have seen an increase and they're shielded. We have this Zashi wallet, which has been getting some rave reviews from some people. And that's good that they have a wallet that does have auto shielding. It is something that has been sorely needed, but it's not good enough. And I called them out during the podcast. I said, they're being pussies. Okay. They don't want to handle the government getting mad at them. And listen, if you're not going to handle it now, you're not going to handle it in the future. Simple as that. If they don't want to fight them, then it's honestly not worth the time to invest in this project. And I'm not just talking about money, but time as well. You know, why should I spend time talking about Zcash, really? And so anyways, yeah, I hit him pretty hard on that. I think I got my point across pretty well. And we talked about a bunch of other stuff. It was kind of frustrating because during our conversation, my mic kept cutting out because of a glitch on his end. So I'd be talking and then he'd say, oh, hold on, you have to go back like 10 seconds. Your mic wasn't working. It's just like, that's really frustrating because once I get going, like it's, you then have to rewind and like rethink of your, yeah, it's hard. So that kept happening. So that was pretty annoying. But the one thing though, I do want to point out is prior to this interview, like with Joel, I had a lot of people actually that were interested, of course, but also I had a lot of people who were saying that it was not worth my time to do this interview, that Vlad is untrustworthy, I'm wasting my time, that sort of thing. And I really disagree with this. I really do not like this mindset. We always have to be open to talk with different people. And the way I look at it, I'm going on a show with overlap, with audiences that overlap, right? But there's also a lot of people who like Vlad's show who have never even thought of cryptocurrency in the way that I'm approaching it. You know, treating cryptocurrency like a serious project, like a serious thing, not just number go up. Now, there are other shows that do this, and I just appeared on two of them, really. Vlad and Joel, they both are serious about cryptocurrency, except they are more so in it for the tech, whereas I'm more so in it for the crypto anarchism. There's a crossover, though, for sure. And I think I really got my point across with that, where it's all about using cryptocurrency and not necessarily caring about what other projects think of you. Because, like, for example, when I brought up, you know, Zcash needing to go to Z, Vlad said, well, we don't want to deal with the inflation bug concerns from other people. And it's like, if you trust the math, who gives a shit, right? Like, why limit yourselves to having T addresses? Like, you're just opening yourselves up to attack. And this is where a lot of the skepticism comes from Monero people. It doesn't make sense. And actually, today we will be covering a vulnerability in the Zashi wallet because of these T addresses. So it's not like I'm saying this to be nitpicky. It's a legitimate concern. It's a legitimate concern. And, you know, when you have 27% of your transactions shielded, that's good. It's an improvement, but it's not 100%, which would be better. And if they actually went for fully shielded, Monero would have serious competition at that point. Like I would take Zcash a hell of a lot more seriously because they have a lot of people working on it, and I mean they have a lot of infrastructure they've invested in. We do have to respect that. But of course, they probably will not. And the reason they don't want to do that is because they don't want to deal with the pushback they'll get with regulations. They would definitely be delisted from a lot of these different exchanges. They would lose all of their connections that they have within the government, which I'm sure they have quite a few. And that's just the path they've chosen. And I find that to be unacceptable. But anyways, it was a good talk. 4 hours long, by the way. I had to take a fucking piss break. I'm like, Jesus, dude. But Vlad's good, though. Yeah, I mean, we covered a lot of different ground. So I would check that out. It's a good listen. I thought I was doing bad during it, but I went back and listened to at least the Zcash part. And I thought I did pretty good. It's worth it to have these conversations. It's also worth it to represent Monero in a very friendly way, right? Because that's my interview style that I've kind of developed is very friendly. Like I'm not in it to, like, you know, try to attack people. And if you have that kind of extending, you know, generosity to people who you disagree with, then those people will be more likely to accept your opinion and respect it. And yeah, Vlad and Joel, they do not like the concept of dark net market maximalism. It makes them very uncomfortable, and that's fine. However, I think that time will tell, and as Monero continues to be the most adopted, they will eventually acknowledge that maybe there is something to what he's saying. That from that adoption of darknet markets just comes more adoption in everything else. It's just kind of the natural thing. More people using Monero means more people will use Monero, and it kind of snowballs from there. To prepare for the podcast, I did listen to an interview Vlad did with the with some Monero researchers about full chain membership proofs, and that was pretty great. It was a good overview and very thorough. So I would actually recommend checking that podcast out if you want kind of like a comparison between Monero and Bitcoin privacy, as well as Zcash. They talk a lot about Zcash and the nuances there, because that's the thing. There's a lot of nuances here, and it's important to like know them so you can debate them appropriately. And this actually leads me to a very interesting kind of point I want to make here. And it's that I understand the origins of Zcash are fucking weird, and there's a lot of weirdness involved with that. And I don't fully trust in myself. You got the whole Israel connection, fucking weird. Yeah, the U.S. government investing in it. You had the mystery of the trusted setup, right? A lot of things they did early on were pretty stupid in that regard. Their endorsement of ASIC mining, terrible. Or their embracing of it, I should say. Obviously, the T addresses, not having Z to Z transactions, the compliance in general. There's so many mistakes they've made, and that's why it's hard to just like find one thing to criticize them about. There's just a lot. But I do want to say, though, that the full-on kind of like anti-Semitic angle is bad optics, okay, guys? And I'm not going to say you shouldn't do that. And I'm just saying that it's better to just hit them on the fact that they like compliance and that they are not really fighting back, because this is something we know for sure, and they have no counter-argument against it. There really is no argument against having full-on Z2Z transactions that doesn't sound like them wanting to comply with regulations. It's such a metadata vulnerability. And yeah, it's just not good. And people are going to get burned because of it in the future, almost assuredly. So yeah, I would encourage my listeners to cool it with the anti-Semitism, all right? Just cool it, guys. Well, like, whatever. Like, it's funny how, like, people do get very offended by things on the internet. And I guess part of the Monero culture is not really caring about offending people, which is great. However, there is this element of optics that we have to understand here. And I guess this is why, like, when people kind of highlight Monero, they're just going to attack, like, you know, that kind of like low-hanging fruit, and there's nothing I can do about that. But that's why I like to, when I go on these shows, I'm very friendly, presentable, I try to speak things out clearly and point out things in different ways, right? Instead of just talking about the price going up. And you know, what I'm not going to do, though, is go and I disavow the different people in Monero. No, I'm not going to do that. It's just, at the end of the day, Monero is a digital commodity, and there's people who are going to use it, and that's just that. So I think I navigated that part of the conversation pretty well. But again, it is kind of it's kind of funny, like, when you're having like a debate against somebody, about Zcash. There's so many different angles you can go at it from, but that is like talking about Israel, Mossad, PSYOP stuff. It's like, well, I'm not saying you don't have a point there, but sometimes it could just be bad optics. But who gives a shit, I guess. And to be fair though, like if you're, you know, your like community is like afraid of like looking into these things because you don't want the association of being, you know, an anti-Semite or something, that's a problem. You have to be like brutally honest. And on that front, like I do agree with people who do point out this association because it is weird. And I guess this is going to sound weird, but like the people at Zcash, they need to be a lot more respectful of our skepticism here. So like instead of responding to the skepticism, they just call it anti-Semitic. And to be fair, some of it is just full on, you know, you're seeing the happy merchants. It's like, okay. But like they have to acknowledge that this is fucking weird. Like the association with Israel and the United States Defense Department, that's weird. And Monero Mateo actually mentioned this on his I don't know if he has like a podcast. He's been releasing a ton of content lately. It's been very good. But he had a good point where he was kind of just like he's tired of the gaslighting. It's like this like Like we have every right to be skeptical of something like this. And it's honestly bullshit that the Zcash people are, you know, saying like, oh, well, that's just insane conspiracy nonsense. It's like, dude, like everything is backdoored. Did you not see the whole Edward Snowden thing? Israel, to give an example, they had a covert operation involving different countries and these fake companies. And what they did is they smuggled in bombs in these, what were they, pagers? They smuggled in actual bombs in these pagers, sold it directly to these militants in Lebanon, and they exploded them in public too. They actually kill children by that, by doing this. It like that is fucking brutal terrorism. It's evil. It is sick. And it involves a ton of shady stuff going on behind the scenes. If they're able to do that, I mean, what else are they able to do, right? And so anyways, for anyone who is scared of confronting that type of association, you're part of the problem. We have to have these conversations. So anyways, that is pretty much what I have to say about Zcash. I'm fucking tired of talking about this project. And the other thing too, Zcash is pumping again. And I will say it's probably highly likely it's going to pass Monero soon. I think it's quite likely. So, it is what it is, guys. This is just the chosen project right now. They're trying to pump it. And, you know, you can play around with that and maybe make some money. I view it as pretty risky, but you know what? It is what it is. I wouldn't get too upset about it. If anything, it's going to be a good thing for the price of Monero because, you know, the price of Monero probably will go up because of this, which is good. It helps our network out. I haven't even thought about the Cubic stuff in like 3 weeks. How cool is that? That situation is totally neutered now because they just don't have the hash rate anymore. Anyways, we're going to move on here, but I would check out that interview with Vlad as we go over a lot of different stuff, and it was good stuff. So, what's up? Oh, yeah, so next up, big announcement. I will be speaking at Monerotopia. I will be there. It's in February. I'm very excited. I can't wait. So that's going to be cool. I'm probably going to do a talk on darknet market maximalism. Something like that. I haven't decided yet, but I will be there. I think Doug also mentioned that I could maybe be on a panel too. I guess I would do something like that. So it'll be fun. I haven't decided yet if I'm going to show my face or not. I was thinking I might just wear like a luchador mask. I think that'd be kind of funny. You know what I mean? I am looking forward to that. Mexico City is awesome. I talked about that recently. So I'm really excited to go back, hang out with the Monero fam. And I have a little something I'm cooking up too that I'll be able to sell at the event. But I'm not going to reveal what that is right now. But that should be coming pretty soon. So more details on that. We will be having some new merch stuff coming. And it'll be a good time. It's going to be a really good time. So if you are on the fence about Monerotopia, well, it's got a big exclusive now. I will be there. So it should be a lot of fun. Okay, so let's now pivot to the news. And to start things off, we have two different political commentators who brought up cryptocurrency this week. The first one, Tucker Carlson. Now, Tucker had previously brought up Monero, actually, or it was Roger Ver brought up Monero to him. And anyways, he commented on Bitcoin recently. And, well, let's play the clip and react to it.
Do you have any, do you invest in Bitcoin? Do you think it's like a viable asset to invest in?
Oh, man. I don't want to make more enemies. I mean, you want the real, it's my last answer, but so you want the actual answer?
Yeah, sure.
And here's why. I spoke at the Bitcoin conference actually last year. I've spoken at a couple of Bitcoin conferences. I love the idea of Bitcoin because I love the idea of financial autonomy. I don't want what I buy or sell to be tracked. I don't want my money to be tracked. It's nobody's business. I pay my taxes. I've never cheated on my taxes. I've been very tempted, but I never have one time cheated on my taxes. And once the money's mine, like, I can do what I want with it. And if you find me breaking the law, arrest me. But if you don't, it's none of your beeswax, as the kids say. So I love the idea of the blockchain. I knew some of the people involved in that whole thing. And I still believe in that promise, okay? Roger Ver, for example. I don't know how closely you follow this, but, like, there are people who still believe in that. But it turns out that it is not, to this point, been, I hope it will be, a way to conduct financial transactions privately at all. And that really freaks me out. I'm really afraid of a digital currency because that is totalitarian control. If you can punish people, if you can zero out their bank account and keep them from eating, you will have total obedience. Like, that's totalitarian. And I know that young people love crypto because they've been completely screwed in the job market and there are no financial opportunities for most of them. And they know they're staring down a life of, if not poverty, certainly a step down from the way they grew up, most young people. And so Bitcoin for them, crypto in general for them, is a promise of, like, how can I make it in this world? Like, I would like to have a normal life. How can I do that? And crypto is a way they think that they can. And I'm praying for them. I hope that's true. But I fear that it will become, like so many other things in our country, a scam of sorts run by a coalition of the financial beneficiaries, like a few people who are getting all the winnings, and the politicians they control who use it to further their control of American society. I'm really worried about that. And so I'll just be totally bummed with you. I'm a gold buyer, and I've been vindicated big time in that. And everyone's like, oh, you're crazy buying gold. Yeah, you know, it was good enough for the Phoenicians. It's good enough for me. And I, in general, don't get involved in anything I don't understand. I think that's a really good rule. So there's some things I think I understand, turns out I didn't understand them. But in general, I try to limit myself to things I understand. And nobody can explain to me who Satoshi was, the creator of Bitcoin, this mysterious guy who apparently died, but nobody knows who he was. You know, I grew up in D.C. primarily, in a government family, so CIA. That's my guess. Can't prove it, but, like, you're telling me to invest in something whose founder is, like, mysterious and has billions of dollars of unused Bitcoin? Like, what is that? And no one can answer the question, including some of the biggest holders of Bitcoin in the world, who I know personally. They're like, oh, it doesn't matter. What matters to me? Right?
So the first thing I want to say is that was a great answer. I thought that was a really well thought out response. I thought it was funny at the beginning. There's all these groans. And when you're outside of the crypto echo chamber, this is how people respond to crypto. It's, oh God, he's talking about crypto. And this just shows you that this is like idea of hyper-Bitcoinization, it's just not realistic. Most people hate crypto because they're associating it with scams, right? They're associating it with get-rich-quick schemes. And I don't blame them because they're right. Most of cryptocurrency is like that. We are overrun with moon boys here. But, you know, he answered this really well. He brings up the fact he loves financial autonomy, but then he brings up how he's concerned about the tracking of funds. And he mentions Roger Ver. And if you recall back when Tucker Carlson interviewed Roger Ver, Roger Ver did name drop Monero. And he also brings up the fact that Bitcoin isn't private, and he's very concerned about that. It seems to me like he is indirectly talking about a certain cryptocurrency that we usually talk about, without saying that M word, but that's what he's talking about, which is pretty interesting to see. And it's kind of, I don't know, with Roger Ver now free again, I'm actually quite curious about what his next move is. I haven't heard of anything, but it does seem like he is somewhat positioning himself to be a major Monero bull, considering he name dropped Monero before. He also name dropped Xano, so I'm assuming he's also going to be talking a lot about Xano as well. But I find that to be very interesting, because Roger Ver, of course, is very well known in the Bitcoin universe. He was around in the very early days. And of course there's Bitcoin Cash, but, it does seem to be this realization that people are having that transparent blockchains are just not ideal. They are a liability. And so then Tucker Carlson, to go back to him, he brings up the fact that Satoshi could be CIA. Now, this is kind of weird too, because if you weren't aware, Tucker Carlson's father was in the CIA, and he's got a weird backstory too, where it's quite possible he's also CIA. And if you go down that rabbit hole of like Operation Mockingbird, who the hell knows what's going on with journalism these days? I do not believe Satoshi was CIA. Or part of a three-letter agency. I think he was just a cypherpunk. That being said, I do believe Bitcoin was co-opted by three-letter agencies over time. And the person who's representing them is probably Michael Saylor. Now, I've said this before. I find Michael Saylor to be highly suspicious. He just doesn't seem real. You know, it doesn't seem like he has a personality. It seems like his only purpose is to completely derail the purpose of Bitcoin. So yeah, I think Saylor, I think he's somehow involved with a three-letter agency with the purpose of, you know, derailing this digital cash movement and instead turning it into an association with pyramid schemes. But I do not believe Satoshi is CIA though. I think that's kind of ridiculous, especially because we have all those emails and all the work that had been done by cypherpunks over the years to kind of get to Bitcoin. It was very organic. So anyways, this was a really interesting answer, though. Tucker Carlson knows about Monero. He very clearly does, but he's not saying the word. And this is a recurring thing. What is going to break this open, though? Because eventually someone will start talking about Monero. It's inevitable. I don't know. But yeah, this was another interesting elephant in the room moment with regards to Monero. Moving on, we have another clip here, but this one from Nick Fuentes. Nick Fuentes is a political commentator, probably the fastest rising political commentator in the West right now. He's huge. Young kid, I think he's only like 27, but basically the leading figure in the rising ethno-nationalist conservative movement, very anti-immigration, and This was from a show. Let's check it out.
You might have a central bank digital currency. You might have a private digital currency. But it also has benefits if you have a privacy coin like Monero. Bitcoin arguably is a store of value, is a good asset.
So yeah, this is a really short clip, but this emphasizes the clout that Monero has built over time. And this is something I really bring up a lot in Darknet Market Maximalism, but the fact that Monero has been used for criminal activity for so long has given it aura, okay? And that aura has given it credibility. And that is why someone like Nick Fuentes will name drop it, because he acknowledges that, okay, people actually use this. This isn't just some, you know, get rich quick scheme. This is life or death for some people, and they're using Monero. And he maybe even acknowledges that in the future, he will probably rely on something like Monero. I do know that they have tried to get Monero involved with his chat in the past. But as of this point, he's still able to get around that type of censorship. So anyways, he's not using cryptocurrency yet. Hopefully we can get him to start using XMR chat. And you know what? I know I have fans of my show who like Nick Fuentes. This might be a good opportunity maybe to bring up XMR chat to him. That would be a huge endorsement. And I could see him using it for his show, right? But I don't know the whole, you know, backstory with Fuentes in terms of how he perceives receiving cryptocurrency for donations. So I'm sure there's fans of his who have like a better knowledge of how he would react to that. But if it would be positive, I think that would be a great opportunity. So hopefully we can get him receiving Monero donations in the future, because that would be a huge endorsement. But nonetheless, though, this is great to hear. It's great to see that Monero has that credibility. And we already know this, but it's nice to get that confirmation from one of the leading, you know, voices out there for the conservative movement today. Okay, next up, we have an article from The Rage. We're going to be talking about Trump pardoning the Binance founder. Changpeng Zhao, CZ, founder of Binance, one of the largest cryptocurrency exchanges in the world, has received a presidential pardon on Wednesday, The Wall Street Journal reports. In 2023, CZ pled guilty to willfully failing to maintain an effective anti-money laundering program in violation of the Bank Secrecy Act while operating a money transmitting business. At the same time, Binance Holdings Ltd. pled guilty to AML violations, unlicensed money transmitting, and sanctions violations in what the Department of Justice described as the largest corporate resolution to include criminal charges for an executive. In consequence, CZ was forced to step down as Binance CEO and sentenced to 4 months in federal prison, significantly less than the 3 years prosecutors had initially suggested. While Binance Holdings agreed to pay a $4.3 billion fine and was placed under a monitorship by U.S. authorities. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt told the Wall Street Journal that Trump had exercised his constitutional authority by issuing a pardon for Mr. Zhao, who was prosecuted by the Biden administration in their war on cryptocurrency, adding that the Biden administration's war on crypto is over. But Kian Rodriguez and William Hill, the developers of the non-custodial Bitcoin privacy wallet, Samurai Wallet, are awaiting their sentencing for conspiracy to operate an unlicensed money transmitting business on November 6. Tornado Cash developer Roman Storm continues to fight the same conviction for building the Ethereum privacy tool, while simultaneously attempting to fight off a potential retrial on the mistried charges on conspiracy to violate sanctions, and conspiracy to facilitate money laundering. As opposed to Samurai Wallet and Tornado Cash, Binance Holding operated a centralized custodial exchange under its international entity, Binance.com, while which allowed users to open accounts with no more than an email address. As crypto critic Molly White explains, U.S. users were officially excluded from signing up for such level one accounts, but Binance allegedly did not do much to verify that users were not actually located in the United States. In 2019, Binance launched Binance US dedicated to US users, and by 2022, level one accounts were shut down globally. According to the Wall Street Journal, CZ's pardon may now pave the way for Binance.com to return to the US and potentially cut short Binance US's monitorship. In response to CZ's pardon, Senator Warren is arguing that upcoming market legislation, which is currently pitted in strong favor of developer protections, must, quote, stop this kind of corruption, end quote. Market structure talks have stalled since a leaked Democrat proposal laid out that the other side of the aisle would like to see non-custodial developers regulated as digital asset intermediaries subject to the BSA sanction laws. As the Wall Street Journal reports, Binance first reached out to allies of Trump last year, offering to strike a business deal with the family as part of a plan to return the company to the U.S., adding that representatives of the Trump family have held talks to take a financial stake in the U.S. arm of Binance. Binance has been one of the main drivers of the growth of World Liberty's dollar-pegged cryptocurrency called USD1. It delivered World Liberty's first big break this spring when it accepted a $2 billion investment from an outside investor paid in USD1. Binance has also incentivized trading in USD1 across platforms it controls, the journal reports. According to the New York Times, CZ's pardon was spearheaded by Teresa Goody Gulian, a former SEC lawyer who represents both Trump, World Liberty Financial, as well as its co-founder, and son of longtime Trump ally Steve Witkoff, Zach Witkoff. So there we go. Fell for it again, Ward. The Trump administration, they don't care about actual privacy advocates, obviously. They don't care about liberty with regards to Bitcoin. They care about who is giving them money. And in this case, Binance had essentially bribed the Trump administration with a $2 billion outside investment to their stablecoin. And I'm sure there's other stuff as well. But yeah, this is Trump pardoning the Binance founder. And it's another rotten chapter in how cryptocurrency has been handled by this Trump administration. So moving on, we now have to cover a vulnerability that was found in the Zashi wallet. This was found by ZachXBT, well-known chain analysis, blockchain surveillance individual. He's been around forever. And he put out a tweet thread. I guess he was tasked with looking into Zashi. And this is what he said. He said, as part of my work, I like to test out privacy products and figure out what works and what doesn't so I can abuse any design flaws for my investigations. With the recent hype around Zashi and its near-intense integration, I tested it for Zcash. For this example, I bridged one Sol from Solana to Zcash via near-intense and shielded it after. And then he shows the transactions. Now let's say I want to anonymously fund an Ethereum address for my Zashi wallet with my shielded ZEC so I can use the cross-pay feature via the near intents to receive 0.005 ETH to the following address. He posts an image showing this. He goes on to say that his order completed after several minutes, but the issue is a near intents refund of 0.001598 ZEC was also made to my T address I initially shielded, from which establishes a clear link between my addresses. Someone can simply match up timing/amounts from the near intents address and identify ZEC refund transactions, allowing someone to de-anonymize your T address you initially shielded ZEC from, since it is static and refunds are not shielded. So basically, when you're using the Zashi wallet, you have a T address that's assigned to you. And when you shield your Zcash, you are still revealing who you are if you attempt to swap into another protocol via near intents, because it refers back to your T address by sending you a refund. So Zach went on to say that he contacted the Zashi team and they informed him that they plan to solve this privacy issue by adding ephemeral addresses soon and eventually shielded near intent refunds. In the meantime, Zach suggests using multiple seeds on separate devices if you use near intent integration. So, I mean, with something like this, like, I really hate the phrase perfect privacy, or like, you will be private, you know, because privacy is not an on or an off switch. In this case, we've been hearing all over and over again about how shielded Zcash is like the best thing ever, and it is the pinnacle of what cryptocurrency privacy should reach for, right? But what is illustrated here is why the concept of transparent addresses throws a wrench into everything. And here we have a situation where, because they're also using transparent addresses, they're leaving around a ton of metadata. And that metadata can be used to actually de-anonymize transactions. And that's exactly what ZachXPT did in this situation. So if you are using Zashi, please be aware of this. I might actually make a video on this. I'm not really sure yet, mostly because I don't really care about Zcash. But I feel like some of my supporters probably would like that, just because I do have Zcash holders who listen to my show. So maybe I will do that. As it is, I'm way behind on making videos anyway, especially with my trip coming up next week. But anyways, that is the ZachXPT Zashi story. All right, let's move on. What's next? And the last thing to get to today before the super chats, NanoGPT released September payment statistics. And yet again, Monero continues its domination. Way out in front. It's not even close. Monero is in first. Let's see here. With 42.76%. Nano is at 22.91%. Bitcoin at 16.71%. Litecoin at 6.06%. Ethereum 4.19%. Lightning Network 1.47%. And Zcash 1%. So there you have it. Monero is actually used. And in their tweet thread, NanoGPT says, "We were asked whether the attack on Monero impacted usage. Simply put, not really. In July, Monero was first with 52.92% of the usage. In August, Monero was first with 36.17%. In September, Monero first, 42.67%. Attack or no attack, Monero offers true utility for those that value their privacy." Yes, it does. Okay, so now we're going to get to the Super Chats. Yeah, kind of weird ending the show with Super Chats. But I don't know, maybe I like this. I'll have to think about it. I kind of like starting the show with Super Chats just because that's like how we've always done it. But it's also kind of nice to end it because we can kind of just relax, take a little extra time maybe, go into random things. So, you know what, leave me a comment. Tell me what you think. If you want Super Chats at the beginning or ending of episodes, maybe I'll put a Twitter poll up as well. But XMR chat is working again, so we can actually get to these. So we got 3 donations this week. If you want to donate, xmrchat.com/Xenu. First one's from Metadata, who gives 0.02 XMR. Thank you, man. Appreciate that. And he says, using a kill switch VPN router with or without Tor to mine XMR via P2 pool with GooPax is a secure method for receiving non-KYC cryptocurrency. This setup enhances privacy by routing traffic through encrypted channels and reducing the risk of IP exposure. Well, Metadata, I think you just gave a very ironclad way of getting non-KYC Monero, for sure. You know, the only thing I will say, though, is recommending, like, if someone wants to get non-KYC Monero, mining Monero is very slow. I think it's fantastic. Don't get me wrong. I really encourage people to mine Monero. But if you want like a couple hundred dollars worth of Monero, it's better to go other routes, right? You know, you might want to check out RetoSwap, for example. But, you know, to your point, though, if you do set up P2 pool, and especially if you're, you know, using a VPN or Tor. So that's what I would say to that. But this is obviously a way to get crypto non-KYC. It's not like the early days, though, right? Because like back in the day, you could mine a shitload of Bitcoin or Monero non-KYC. These days, it's a lot more costly and you're not getting as much. But that's just kind of how, you know, demand works, right? There's a lot more demand for Monero, therefore, this isn't as easy. So, anyways, thank you again, Metadata, for that donation. Next up, we got a donation from Sirhan, who gives 0.01 XMR. Thank you. And he says, hey man, really liked your video on PGP. Please do more tutorials on useful skills like this. Awesome, man. I'm really glad you liked that, Sirhan. I had a great time making that video, and it's actually my second most viewed video on my channel. I'm thrilled with the feedback for it. And yeah, I made that video because I was kind of looking for a good PGP guide myself. Not that I don't understand PGP, but like I was just curious if I could like find one to give to somebody else. And I was like, you know what? These videos aren't that good. I think I can do better. And I think I did a really good job. I have a good hook in the beginning. I really walk through things slowly. And yeah, I think it came out really good. So happy you liked that. And yeah, I don't know what other videos I'm going to make. I will be making other like beginner type videos. I have had multiple requests for I2P, so I have to do that. Probably one on Tor as well. So probably those two. Maybe a video on Tails at some point. That probably would get a lot of people bugging me. I use Arch Linux, but there's already like a million different Arch videos out there, and I'm not really like an expert on that. But I mean, I don't know. You know, another thing I could do is like reviews of different Monero wallets. I had an idea to do that a while ago. I just never got around to it. So maybe like videos on different wallets and different things like that. But yeah, I mean, if you guys like content like that, definitely let me know. Or if you have any recommendations, let me know, because yeah, the goal of this channel is to spread education as well as my opinions on digital cash. So yeah, let me know. All right, and last up, we got a donation from Georgian XMR, and he gives 0.1 XMR. Thank you for that big donation, Georgian XMR. And he says, total surveillance is likely, so we must prioritize privacy tools. Monero's crucial for secure transactions, but without alternative networks like I2P, it's limited. Both are equally vital for private, resilient internet access and restrictive environments. Yeah, man, I mean, it's hard to say, but we're getting towards the end game for the ClearNet. I really think that the ClearNet is going to be like this weird thing of the past that future generations will think is insane that we had access to. You know, I really firmly believe that. And the problem right now is that because there's not a lot of demand for I2P or Tor, there's just not a lot of people using it. But I do think over time you will have higher and higher demand for these alternatives, because there's going to be a ton of censorship in the future. And I agree that total surveillance is likely, it's going to happen, as well as digital ID. It's going to happen. Digital ID will happen. This actually is a good segue too, because you know, this week I was thinking about AI again. I've been thinking a lot about AI, and I realized something about AI that's going to happen. And it's this idea that I have, and probably other people have thought of this too, but it's like AI visual terrorism. And the idea here is with AI, you can recreate hyper-realistic images of things. And my concern is that with that technology, you could give somebody PTSD if like you were to have like a image of their, you know, their father or something, and you sent them a picture of their father, you know, with like their head chopped off or something. And it would look like, again, hyper-realistic. You know, it would look real. And that's like super fucked up. But like things like that, and you can use your imagination. I don't see why these things wouldn't happen, where people will be creating images that are really fucked up. And as that gets worse and worse, I can see this being the segue towards digital ID, because people will just be out of control with it. And you will be able to create chaos with this type of technology. I mean, think of like the fake type of videos you could make with that, that would cause like riots, like race riots or something, or things of that nature. It's one of those things where really it's the human imagination is really what is the factor here, and humans are pretty imaginative, and that is a highly concerning for me. So yeah, this AI stuff, man. I mean, I was wrong about this. I didn't see it accelerating as fast as it is, but it really is accelerating. And this week especially, there was like another huge step forward. Grok just released a bunch of this big AI update. And like you can literally just like animate a picture like super easily now. And it like looks really good. And that's crazy, because it's... everything is getting, it's just getting better and better and better. And it's actually in some cases past the point of being hyper-realistic. But it's just going to get worse. And yeah, I mean, something like that really concerns me. So I think if I had to guess, that is going to be the stepping stone to digital ID. And you know, once that starts happening, then I guarantee I2P and Tor will become much more popular, because we will need alternatives at that point. All right, guys, I'm going to wrap things up there. Thanks for the support. I only have one more episode before my trip to Spain, which will be actually next week. So I'm really excited for that. But more details on that next week. I'm going to get going, guys. AntiMoonBoy.com if you'd like to see all my content. Have a good one.